Today on the Trade Busters podcast, we have another first principles episode. And today's topic is the idea of thinking in components. And this came up because, and I've mentioned this before, and this idea that sometimes, you know, when we are trading strategy and things go wrong, we tend to try and rationalize what to do about it and kind of make up stories about. So if, let's say, the strategy, we have a stop loss, right? And we have a few times where it happens that the market moves just enough to hit the stop loss and then it reverses, right? We think, the stop loss is too narrow. If I just widen a bit, this wouldn't have happened. I'll make more money because I will have less stops. And sure, in that instance, you've made, you know, in that particular trade, widening the stop would have been favorable, right? And so we can focus on the times when such an action, you know, which is kind of arbitrary, right? Just, okay, widening the stop. And so we focus on the times when that could help, but we don't think about all the times it wouldn't help. Like, oh, if it went further, we would have just hit the stop anyways and lost more, right? Or we come up with all these rationalizations about, okay, if there is an event day or today there's this speech or someone is going to say something, and so should we adjust this or, you know, pause the stop or make the profit target more aggressive, close early? And there's all these things, and it's not to say that these things don't work, because of course at the end of the day we need mechanics, we need profit takes, we need adjustments, we need stop losses. But it's more the idea that you have to be systematic and really have a reason and understand the implications of every adjustment, every mechanic, right? Every little tweak. And so the idea of thinking components, I mean, it's self-explanatory. Thinking components means look at the different pieces, right? So every strategy you do, right? A strategy is a series of trades. The trades are the components of the strategy. But then for every trade, you know, there's an entry and an exit. And even if you don't forcibly exit, as in a stop loss or profit take, right? If an option expires, right, it exits. Now, granted, that exit may be the option expiring out of the money for full profit, or it may be expiring in the money and you get assigned either shares or stock. But again, there's an exit, right? And so kind of like every action is a reaction. So if I'm just take an example of selling a put, right? And then I have a stop loss. You can think of that as the entry, I sold a put, and a stop loss is I bought a put, right? Same with the profit take. When you profit take, you buy a put. And what does it do to help you think in components? And so, you know, for one, if you haven't already, you should go back and kind of review the past few episodes, you know, knowing your edge, the idea of volatility risk, volatility drag. And thinking components really allows you to focus on, you know, where is the edge coming from? Is there an edge in this particular action I'm taking? And even if there isn't, if it helps reduce your volatility drag, right, that's okay. Because remember, volatility drag is basically a force that's always acting against whatever edge you have. So there has to be some kind of balance. And I have a few examples where we can kind of walk through almost like little case studies to help you, you know, figure out when and how, or in fact, you should always think in components, but kind of how it can help. So we already kind of touched on this, but a stop loss, right? So a strategy like Theta Engine, we're selling puts every day, you know, 90 DT, 15 Delta, yada, yada. We have 60% profit take, 2x net stop loss. So every single entry is selling a put, and every profit take or stop loss is buying a put. Now, if we think our edge from selling options is the volatility risk premium, and in the case of Theta Engine, there's some equity risk premium as well, just kind of the positive drift of the market. Well, then goes, you know, without saying that buying a put should have negative edge, right? So you're entering with a positive edge action and you're exiting with a negative edge action. So you could think, well, what if I didn't have the stop loss, right? Why don't I only do the positive edge action? Would I make more? And actually, so I've done this in the past, but I ran the back test data engine, you know, as is with the mechanics, and I ran the same study without the stop loss. So we're taking out all the actions of stop loss. So there's still profit takes, but we took out all the stop losses. And lo and behold, you make more, right? So, and this is just rough numbers, but the back test I have in Option Omega is from like 2013, March 20th, 2024. And the CAGR for Theta Engine is around 13% at the sizing I've had it. And I kept the same sizing, take the stop losses out, and the CAGR is 23%, right? It basically went up like 60%. And again, that doesn't necessarily surprise me, right? And the premium capture rate also went up a bunch, right? So without the stop losses, your premium capture goes up, your profit goes up. And again, it's because now we've taken out a component of the strategy that is negative edge. We're taking out a component of buying options. So why don't we do that, right? And so there's always a trade-off, right? Obviously, if it sounds too good to be true, oh, no stop losses. Of course, there's a catch because, aha, the max drawdown with and without a stop loss goes from 16% to 83%. Now, just a quick caveat, you know, when there's something kind of this close, like it's basically almost zeroing the account, it's a little too coincidental. I haven't really dug deep in the trade log to check if there's like, oh, would it have got a margin called or something? Or did it really just happen to go down 84%, right? And this was in COVID, by the way, which is, again, isn't surprising, but then it came all the way back and it ended up making more money after, you know, the duration of the test, which is like 11 years. And so, but that's irrelevant because for one, I'm not going to trade anything that has anywhere close to that amount of drawdown. Now, your risk tolerance may be higher than mine, right? Maybe you're okay with a 20, 30, 40% drawdown. But again, 83, I don't think, basically that strategy is untradeable. Or if you're ever going to get that close, definitely you risk a margin call. And more so, you risk just not being able to hang on, right? You're going to basically just give up or something, right? I basically consider that untradeable. So if you're going to say, hey, you know, what about volatility direct? So this is one of those cases where, yes, it incidentally, a strategy with no stop loss happened to make more. But again, for practical reasons, I find it untradeable. But kind of going back to the idea of this episode, again, we only looked at this just because I wanted to show that, hey, it is true. With the strategy, we have selling puts, positive edge, right? Buying puts, even for a stop loss. The action of buying is negative edge, or you're buying puts, you're buying options. So yes, having the stop loss makes the strategy overall less profitable. But again, the trade-off is it's basically untradeable. Okay, so the next kind of little case study is the idea of rolling, right? And just to say, I'm not going to say that rolling is bad, all rolling is bad, don't do it. It's really the idea of kind of how you roll, when you roll, and again, being able to look at the components of the trade, right? When you roll a position, you're closing one and you're opening another, right? Those are the components of the roll. You close your position, that's an action, and let's say I sold a put, right? The rolling is the action of buying a put and then selling a new one. Now, a stop loss, right? With Theta Engine, a stop loss is almost like, for me, a roll, because I stop out and generally I put on another position that day anyway. So you can think of it as, you know, rolling is basically just an adjustment. Again, you close a position, you open a new one. So the idea is like, you know, when you're trading, you kind of, where you're managing risk, right? You want your book to be in a favorable position, in a position that you want to be in with high probability. And so if I have a position that gets stopped out, that probably means, well, I mean, it does mean the market moved against me, right? And so the delta is too high. The exposure is no longer one that I want, right? So if I roll it out, right? I close the position, take the loss and go to out in time, whatever, but also roll it up and move the strike further out of the money, right? I've entered a new position that's a more favorable position. And so that kind of adjustment, right? You're literally managing risk, so that's probably okay. But of course, when we say rolling, we're probably thinking about kind of the idea of keeping the dream alive and rolling the same strike, right? So if we think about it this way, if I have a position that moved against me and I'm, you know, the delta is too high, too much exposure, and yes, I roll to the same strike, I roll out in time, and this illusion of I got more credit and therefore increasing my chances of profit, really you're not, right? Don't chase the credit. The credit's an illusion. If you got to the point where you have to roll, your account's already down. You're already taking a loss. And so putting on that new position is probably at the money or in the money. And so you have to think about, you know, is that new position something I would actually enter into if I didn't have this kind of preconceived notion or this baggage of, oh, I'm trying to quote unquote save an old trade, right? And that's the idea of thinking components, because when you roll, you close one, that old position's out the door, right? It's off your books. And so would you enter a new one that's in the money, or well, I mean, probably not, right? Because if you sold, let's say your mechanic is to sell, you know, 15 delta, 20 delta options, whatever it is, well, now you're going to sell a new 50 delta or 60 delta. Like, why would you do that, right? Other than to have this illusion of keeping the dream alive or somehow thinking you're making the trade better, right? But again, breaking those apart and just thinking, right? It's literally like out of the frying pan, right? Out of the frying pan into the fire. If you roll to the same strike, you know, out in time and just chasing that credit. I mean, you know, that particular example, I'm sure there's been a lot said about that, but, and people have said, yes, you're closing one, opening the other, but I just kind of hope that, like, in this framework of always thinking components and really stripping everything down and breaking into the pieces kind of helps you evaluate them in a different way. And so the final kind of example slash case study I have is this idea of financing a hedge, right? It's this kind of magic concept of, oh, a free hedge. And one example is, right, so you can buy hedges, tail risk hedge, buying out of the money options, teenies, 90 DT, whatever it is. And the idea is you can finance it by using a put, right? A selling a put. So like a ratio, right? You sell a put and it's enough premium and you buy two out of the money, you know, further out of the money puts, right? And you try to set it up for like free, right? No credit, or sorry, no debit. So like a net even. And so the idea is that the short put is kind of financing those long puts. And in this case, yes, the structure is set up, you know, this is a called a back ratio hedge. And if the market crashes really quickly, the idea is those two long puts can expand volatility. And so you'll be covered, right? You won't have a marked loss, even though the market's crashing, right? You're short a put that's closer to money. You're long two further out of the money puts. And the idea is that the vega on those kind of cover you. So that's fine. But this idea of this kind of valley of death, as it were, if the market grinds down, then you can lose money on the short put and the long puts don't do anything. So that's a different discussion. But the idea of this financing, right? And you put down this ratio and it seems like a nice idea. But again, if you just hold those two without any management, right? This idea again that you can still lose money on the position, because if we look at the end of the day, you think you're gonna finance these hedges with this short put, right? And it's kind of this magic formula. But let's strip it apart, right? You have the hedge and you have your short put. And so you're still paying the hedge. You're still paying that cost. No matter what you think, you're paying it, right? Because you're buying those puts. And you're financing with what, right? You're just taking more risk. All you're doing is having another position that has risk to offset that. And so if you only focus on the credit, right? Oh, I can sell one and buy two and it's a net credit, right? This chasing of no money out of pocket can kind of distort your perception of like what's actually going on with your positions under the hood, right? So if I were to break it apart and say, okay, I'm just going to pay for my hedge, whatever that cost is, right? Because I want tail risk protection. And something is going to quote unquote finance. If you want to think of it that way, well, what you finance it with doesn't really matter, right? And so you just need to generate some kind of income. So again, if we agree, no matter what, you're going to pay that debit on those long puts. If you want to offset that cost, go ahead and do it. But why don't you do it in a way that is kind of safest, lowest risk, more consistent, right? If you insist on kind of putting on this package and just holding it as a package, then it forces your hand to accept whatever path dependency that package has, right? That ratio. But if we strip it apart and say, okay, if I'm going to buy the two long puts anyways, what am I going to finance it with? What's going to offset that cost? Well, it could be a naked put on finance. It could be any kind of your income strategies. It could be Theta Engine. It could be whatever, right? At the end of the day, it doesn't really matter, because if your strategy doesn't call for selling naked puts unmanaged, then why would you accept that as an income stream in your book, when if you buy that ratio and just leave it like that and think it's a hedge, that's basically what you're doing, right? So if I instead say, hey, if I'm trading ERN3 or trading Theta Engine, right, and I've set those at a certain return target, 5%, 6%, 10%, whatever it is, and I need, I want to allocate 2% budget or 3% debit on buying tail hedges. Well, if I scale up my strategy, my income strategy, Theta Engine or Earn, whatever it is, a little bit bigger to make a little bit more so that extra profit goes to fund the hedge. So again, there's no illusion here that I'm somehow making a free hedge, right? I understand I'm taking more risk by sizing up my strategy, my actual income strategy, to offset the cost of that hedge. But in this case, I have much more control over the path dependency and equity curve of my portfolio, right? I'm using a consistent strategy I'm comfortable with, and I understand, hey, I'm just paying a fixed cost, like buying home insurance, buying house, car insurance. Everyone does that, right? Because again, going back to the episode of, the one about if you, have a chance of, if you have a chance of going bust, right? You have no alpha, right? This is like a couple episodes back. So you understand you need the tail risk protection. So go ahead and buy it. Just accept that cost. And if you want to offset it, fine. But do so with something, right? Think of another component that you have more control of. And so again, this idea of thinking components and, stripping down the strategies into the individual trades, stripping down the trades into the individual transactions, helps you to see more clearly where your edge lies, where it doesn't, and to really understand and appreciate the implications of each action that you take. So you can make a more informed decision about how to kind of turn around and put them back together, and the strategies you want to run and the mechanics you want to tweak to kind of optimize the path dependency and the risk management aspect of your strategies. So with that, let's leave it there for today. As always, if you guys enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also visit my trading page at www.thetradebusters.com, where you'll find all of the strategy mechanics and trade logs, as well as various essays that I've written and other podcasts I recommend. Finally, you can follow me on Twitter or X at TheTradeBuster. That's it for today. Thank you for listening, and I will see you guys next time.